Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, welcome inside the Playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I am John Rook. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly sticking around. Eric, what's happening today?
What's up? Kevin keeps turning my mic off, both shows. What are you doing back there?
All right, he's got your mic off.
God almighty.
And I've got myself in a half-second delay, so Kevin wanted me to mention that to him so he can try to fix that problem on our newfangled equipment in the studio. And we'll see, hopefully, if he can do that. Because if I have to sit here and listen to myself a half second later for the next 2 hours, I will go mad.
Now you know how I feel.
Believe me, I got it. Hey, I think you fixed it. All right, way to go. Whatever you punched, Kevin, remember that button. Put a please hit this button when I need to sign or something up next to it. Clearly, I think... you know, today is a little bit of a mixed bag day. Mostly I'm a little bit melancholy simply because of the whole Kevin Falk situation. Falk, of course, confirming what we started to talk about and was tweeted while we were on the air on our show here yesterday. The fact that he's got a torn anterior cruciate ligament in his right knee and then he's out for the rest of the year. Looks like he's going to sit out for, wait for the swelling to go down for the next month thereabouts before he has surgery and hope that he is going to work out to where he can try to come back in time for next summer's training camps. What are your thoughts, at least initially, Eric, on Falk's injury and what it might mean to the team in the short term and in the long term?
Well, I think when we saw him go out on Sunday afternoon at New Meadowlands Stadium, when he started taking his elbow pads off on the sideline, I mean, it was one of those things where you see the injury, and you see the guy go down. Normally, a guy like that doesn't stay down. You're not used to seeing that, first of all.
Right.
You know, a guy of Kevin Falk's nature. You don't normally see that. So that was the first clue that it was probably something serious. We didn't know how badly, obviously, at first. But then he walked to the sideline, which isn't uncommon for players who've torn their ACL to be able to walk it off. He obviously was a little bit better than Brady walked off when he tore his ACL.
It really didn't look like he did anything that terrific, although, you know, he got hit on the side of the knee, we noticed on the play, and then he stayed, you know, basically on his knees, doubled over, and obviously some discomfort on the sideline, looking at it on the replay, again, as I did yesterday. I thought maybe he had just had the wind or something knocked out of him.
Yeah, I wasn't sure at first, but then when I saw them working on the knee, and then he sort of jogged a little bit on the sideline. He did a lot more, I'll say, than either Brady or Welker did in the immediate aftermaths of their ACL injuries. So I think, and that was sort of in line with what Bill had to say Monday when asked about it, and he actually said, "Yeah, they're doing some tests on him. When we know anything, we'll let you know." It seemed like it. I know this might sound weird to say, but it looked at first like it wasn't as bad an ACL injury as the other two guys were because of the movements that he was doing on the sideline and whatnot. He didn't have to be carted off the field. He didn't have to have, you know, people supporting him on either side like Brady did. So I think there was a slight bit of hope from the coaching and medical staff that it might just be a sprain or whatever. So that was my initial reaction. But sitting there Monday listening to Bill, I thought, well, it's probably more serious than a day-to-day injury if Bill's going to acknowledge that they're actually doing tests on him.
Yeah.
And then it just snowballed from there, and you know the rumors came out yesterday that it was the ACL and he was done for the year. It was a little surreal, too, John, to hear the news from the player himself. Normally, either Bill makes the announcement, there's a team press release that comes out announcing that kind of thing. But, you know, Falk standing at his locker announcing it today, just a very bizarre scene, something we're not used to seeing around here, the way it was handled. I mean, I like it. I mean, it was it was good to see that a player came out and was able to do that. But it's not just any player. It's a player of Falk's stature who's been here
all these years,
who's a team captain, you know, earned the respect of the organization. So
yeah, you kind of answered your own thing there. I mean, I think that they allowed him to do that because of his stature. Mm. I mean, he's got the, you know, he's got the longest amount of tenure on the team. He's, you know, got the three Super Bowl rings, you know, out of deference to Kevin, I'm sure they allowed him to basically go ahead and speak for himself, thinking that, you know what, not for nothing, this could be the last time he does this.
Yeah. I mean,
we hope that that's not the case, but
that was my,
I think they probably allowed for that.
Well, that was my other initial reaction. I'll get to that in a second. What I think, how this affects the team, first of all, is it's certainly a major blow to the offense, but I don't think it's by any means the death knell for the offense. I think they can survive it, in other words. They might not be as good, especially on third down or and you know, long, obvious passing situations, but I think they can survive it.
Mm-hmm.
Who does it is another question mark. I mean, it just so happened that it's coincidental that they had signed or acquired Danny Woodhead in this past week, who is essentially the same type of running back that Falk was, a short, stout, third down type who can, you know, catch the ball out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe get you a few yards and on draws and that kind of thing. I think that was just a coincidence there that's who they picked up last week to fill their 53-man roster. But a lot's going to be expected now in a short amount of time from this kid. But for the immediate next few weeks, I think you're probably going to see a lot of what we saw Sunday afternoon in the waning moments, which was, you know, Sammy Morris is going to have to try to get in there a little bit. People have been talking about Julian Edelman for a long time, you know, working in that role. But it's not going to be as effective, whoever's in there, obviously.
Do you really feel that Sammy Morris will be the guy, at least initially, that might see more reps because of Falk's injury?
Well,
do you think it'll work out that way?
Just based on what I saw Sunday, that's who they put in that role.
Yeah.
They were splitting him out wide in what Falk normally does. They had him in the backfield on the obvious downs to try to pass protect. So, and he knows the offense. So I think it's a little too much to expect the new kid, who's really young and really small, to go in there and immediately start contributing the way Kevin Falk did. I think you have to ease the kid into it a little bit. And the best way, I think, to do that is to go with a veteran who's been here, who's a little bit bigger, who can absorb some of the impact of the, you know, the blitzing safeties and linebackers and whatever. So I think we'll see a little bit more of Morris than we may have expected, at least initially. And as far as Falk's future, my initial thought, I had been thinking going into this year that he was probably going to play this year out and then retire. Just not knowing anything, not having spoken to him about it, that's just the inkling I got when he re-signed and decided to come back for this year. I was thinking, well, maybe.
And he re-signed for just 1 year, correct?
I believe it was just the 1 year. And, you know, he could have gone somewhere else, but he decided to come back here. So that led me to believe he's going to play one more year. It's been a good run. He's won his Super Bowls. He's been a captain. He's going to just play it out and call it a career. And he gets hurt. And my thinking is, boy, that could have been the last time we see Kevin Falk. He was asked that question today. He said his son actually asked him that last night or the night before when he got home and said, Daddy, are you done? You all done with football? And he insists that that wasn't the first thing that crossed his mind.
Hmm.
But he added, I'm going to rehab my butt off and see what happens. I'm going to see what my body tells me. So I think he's at least considering the possibility that that could have been his last play.
Well, I think Patriots fans, and certainly those of us who, you know, work for the team, cover the team, hope that that's not that way, that he gets a chance maybe to go out more in his, you know, form or fashion, his style, rather than have it, you know, dictated to him by an injury like this. Nevertheless, you know, when you consider the fact that, you know, he's a running back, that he's lasted, you know, and now into his second decade as a running back in the NFL. Mm. He's got championship rings. He's been through, you know, a couple of coaching stabs on this team. The guy's pretty much done all he can do. He really does not have anything else to prove. If you could tell me now that we could get Kevin Falk to come back next year and he would still be the Kevin Falk that we saw, you know, as this season started, I'd say, sure, why not bring him back another year as long as he feels like he is capable. And maybe his role, Eric, is what has allowed him to play as long as he has, because he's not a, you know, three down type of guy in the backfield.
Oh,
he's especially back.
Certainly. Certainly, so, that's contributed to it.
And if he's able to come back and give you something, in other words, if he's able to rehab this thing 100% and come back and still be able to cut on it and move on it, you know, kind of like what we've seen with Welker this year, then by all means, I think most players, if you ask them, almost every one, not all of them, because some of them will probably say, I know when it's time and this is just, you know, my way of being told it's my time. But I think all players would like to go out on their own terms. Nobody wants to be forced out due to an injury or a contract situation or anything like that. It would not shock me in the least to see Kevin Faulk say, I'm rehabbing, my goal is to come back, I want to come back, and then have him come back next year for whatever reason. And if he's able to play, play, and then call it quits.
Yeah, maybe. But, I mean, if in the back of your mind, I don't know this to be the case, I'm just speculating, if in the back of his mind he was already preparing that this was his last year, I think it's going to be very tough, more on the mental side than on the physical side, to come back again next year. I honestly do. If you're already half thinking about retirement, you're already retired, in my mind.
Yeah. But then again, we don't really know how much he's really contemplated that before the year now, do we?
Well, I had just said that.
Oh.
You got to listen to me when I talk, John.
I was listening. Now. I misconstrued it, obviously.
I know. I'm just busting you. no, I don't know exactly what he was thinking, but just connecting the dots from what we saw this past offseason, you had to think that that was a legitimate possibility. And if he was thinking that, I think it's going to be very difficult for him to try to motivate himself to do it all over again.
Okay. Well, I think, as you probably are aware, that to a man, everyone in that locker room knows what Kevin Faulk means to this football team. Coach Belichick obviously knows what Kevin Faulk has meant to this program and to the entire organization for the 12 years that he has been here. I did want to take just a couple of minutes here to let you hear what Tom Brady had to say about Kevin Faulk from earlier today at Gillette Stadium.
You know, knowing what he's going through, it's always a challenging time. Believe me, when you love football as much as Kevin does, or you love the team as much as Kevin does, he takes it really to heart that he can't be out there with us. So it's an unfortunate injury. So, you know, we've got to move forward, as you know, and other guys are going to have to step into those roles that I explained and really try to live up to what he was doing back there for us.
Security might was for you personally in some of those critical situations where you knew maybe, and I know you probably wanted to be able to depend on everybody, but maybe you knew to a higher level that you could really depend on Kevin.
Yeah, you could, and I think that's a certain thing. I mean, as a quarterback, you're looking for the guys that you can trust, and I think that's what Kevin has always done. You know, when you call Kevin's number, he's open, he catches the ball, he makes the play, he makes the first down, or he gets the ball in the end zone. In the most critical situations. So, you know, that's something that, you know, it takes a special kind of person to be up for that. And like I said, other people are going to have to fill in for that role, and they provide other opportunities for other guys who haven't been in that role to step in there and prove what they can do.
Having gone through it yourself, what is the best advice you can give him?
You know, Kevin will come back from it. He's come back from everything in his life. You know, Kevin's a fighter, man. He's a warrior. He's it's just about, you know, hard work. That's all it is. And Kev will do that.
With a team that is trying to make sure that it gets all the leadership
and role modeling that he can for these younger players who are getting into the league. Can he still lead in the same way? I mean, you went through it. You weren't able to be around as much. Can he still be a touchstone for these guys?
Well, you know, I think it's for the position. You know, the running back position has some veteran players. You know, Kevin's going to be dealing with what Kevin's got to deal with, truthfully. I mean, I think it's hard to really stay in the loop on a daily basis when you're not really participating in the meetings and so forth, or the practice. You know, Kevin can be there, obviously, to offer insight, but you know, not obviously in the same role that he had been in.
All right, so there you go. There's a little bit from Tom Brady on Kevin Faulk, and obviously you're not surprised that he has, you know, glowing things to say about Kevin. I don't know if you were in the locker room, Eric, for what Fred Taylor also had to say about him, but I wanted to read this briefly, and Mike Reese blogged about it on ESPNBoston.com as well earlier today. But first of all, two players, Taylor and Faulk, sat together on the flight home from New York. Patriots gathered for their meetings this morning at the stadium. Faulk was there in the room for the meetings. And Taylor said, I'm not sure how many guys would be in the building. He was in the meetings bright and early, sitting in his chair before anyone else. That's Kev. And that's a credit to him. He's like that when it's time to work out throughout the whole season. I see his truck every time I pull up. He's done 15 minutes on the Stairmaster as well as the sauna before I get here. And I usually get here at 6:45. Meetings start at 8:00. He's always here bright and early. And then Taylor also said, for the longest time, I was trying to understand when I was on the outside looking in about Kevin. I always knew he was a great player, but I never understood why he would always be out there every single game doing what he's done. And to his credit, he works at it. He really, really works at it. Nobody in the league compares to him. He's probably the number one unsung hero across the entire NFL.
Wow.
He's probably one of the most underrated guys. He's the best at what he does. That is what Fred Taylor had to say about Kevin Faulk. And frankly, there may not be any greater compliment that can be played, because you're probably getting it from a guy who could easily be in the Hall of Fame himself.
Absolutely.
I thought that was wonderful praise for a guy like Kevin Faulk. I mean, Tom Brady notwithstanding, what Fred Taylor had to say, I just really hit home with me today.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because they play the same position, and like you said, Fred's done it for, well, you know, a year longer than Faulk has in this league. They've known each other too for, oh, since they were in college, I believe. Faulk was getting recruited by University of Florida, and Taylor was a freshman there, and I believe he's the player who hosted Faulk on his recruiting trip to Gainesville.
Right.
So they've known each other all these years, only been teammates for the last, you know, season and a little bit here in 2010. But so I think there's been that mutual friendship and respect all along. But to see it firsthand probably gives him a little bit more appreciation for it.
I would agree. So at least short term, it looks as if you know, Sammy Morris at least is in line to pick up some of the immediate playing time, and Danny Woodhead will figure out if he's going to be activated by the Patriots here in relatively short order. Of course, the Patriots still have the official paperwork to do on Faulk, which would require them to put him on season-ending IR, and I would assume that would be a procedural move that would come sometime today.
Yeah, I would imagine, since he's already announced it himself, and they need to fill that roster spot now.
What do you is it a fait accompli that Woodhead and he just switch spots on the roster?
Not necessarily, because you know it's entirely possible that Woodhead could be one of the eight guys who's inactive on Sunday.
Okay. That's true. He does have to work himself up to speed on plays and role and all
does
that.
Does have to learn the entire offense. And
yeah, that's very true. Very true. We'll figure out how quickly he can perhaps pick it up. All right, webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. Our telephone number, 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. 82 is the phone number. Facebook page is up, so if you want to chat us up on Facebook, you can do so as well, and we'll get right to your comments. Friend me at John Rook, J-O-H-N-R-O-O-K-E, and we can chat on Facebook as well. We will spend part of this hour going over not only, certainly spending the time talking about Kevin Faulk, but like what the players said a little bit on Monday, we're going to try to turn the page a little bit on what transpired this past weekend and look more toward what's coming up this weekend with the Buffalo Bills. And to that end, Mark Kelso, who is former defensive back, of course, for the Bills, many AFC East fans will recall, and he's the current radio analyst on the Bills Radio Network, and he will join us in hour number two of the program today. The fact of the matter is, and I heard you guys kind of talking about this at the tail end of PFW, Eric, and I know some of the fans are kind of disgruntled based on what they've seen and say, oh, I'm through with them, yada, yada. I have to admit, they're just, we have a lot of fans here that are really spoiled. And I've said that. We've all maintained that for a long time. And they're spoiled naturally because this team has had, such unprecedented success in the decade of the 2000s. And now that we've turned into another decade, I think the expectation is that this team will continue to do what it has always done. And that is, not only compete hard, but win. And when you realize everything in life is cyclical, it's just that the Patriots' downturn in that cycle probably was a little longer than most, because you really didn't see a big uptick in things. You saw a little blip on the radar in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit in the late 70s.
Late 70s, yeah.
And then a little bit in the mid-80s.
Right.
And then it took a huge downturn, and then it came back in the early 90s, early to mid-90s, when Bill Parcells arrived. Leveled off a little bit in the late 90s, and then in 2001 is when it took off.
Right.
And it's maintained a pretty high level for the better part of the last 9 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. And to be able to extend that kind of dominance over that period of time is for whatever you think, it's hard to do. It's rare. Even the Packers of the 60s and the Steelers of the 70s eventually petered out. The point here is that all good things do come to an end. But can you maintain a level of competitiveness where you're then thought of, your football team, and in this instance this franchise, are thought of as one of the elite teams in the NFL rather than sink back to a level, say, where they were pre-1976 or so, where it was really a struggle to get a competitive team, or let's say pre-1993, because that time in the late 80s and early 90s, we had a 1-15 season in there as well.
Right, 2-14, 1-15. It was
under the vaunted Rod Rust as head coach.
Terrible times in the franchise history.
Yeah, well, those are some lowlights. I can understand fans' frustration with the team, but at the same time, if you've been around sports, if you've certainly been a fan of the National Football League for a number of years, and I assume, naturally, those that listen to us and follow us here on Patriots.com radio are, fans that have been fans for, a good number of years, and even some Johnny-come-latelys, that's fine, too. We'll take all comers here. But those that have been around for a while longer have to realize that, especially in this sport, man, things can change at the drop of a hat. And fortunes can change literally on an injury. Of course, 2 years ago it was Brady, and last year it was Welker. This year it's Faulk. Three of the most key guys, you might say, on this entire football team. And yet this team has managed to get itself into the playoffs, with the exception of Brady's year when he went down. And yet they were 11-5 that year and still missed out.
Right.
So I don't really know how to answer fans' anger or their frustration with what they see as, oh, this team is done. And when they say this team is done over 2 weeks or after 2 weeks, and my tendency is to think, well, obviously they're frustrated and they're just angry and they'll be back. Yet there's another part of me that says, well, maybe not. And then there's another part of me that says, good if they don't.
Good
if the fans don't.
Get where
I'm kind of going with that?
Good if the fans don't come back?
If they decide to jump ship, there's always time for them to jump back on. There's always room on the bandwagon, so to speak. And every team has bandwagon fans.
But why is it? Why would it be good?
Well, frankly, more room for newcomers to come on. I kind of look at it that way. If somebody doesn't have the faith in their team, it's kind of like following your college team. If you don't support the program, so to speak, then do you really consider yourself a fan? Are you considered a fan? Should you be considered a fan? What do we expect from people who follow this football team, and do we place any unrealistic expectations on them?
Well, I think just the nature of sport itself in general, it's entertainment. Why do we watch games? Yes, if you go to a school, like you're a diehard burnt orange guy.
Yep.
Texas all the way, Hook 'em Horns.
Yep.
You're from that state. You went to that school. Yep. It's part of you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with professional teams, I think it's a little bit different because the players now in the world of free agency change so much, so you're not really rooting for players anymore. Your college team, those players are there for 4 or 5 years, some of them, right? They're not going. They're usually not going anywhere.
Right.
You can count on those players being there for their careers in college. The pros, you're really, you know, and Seinfeld used to joke about this, you're rooting for laundry.
That's absolutely correct.
You're not rooting for players.
No, I've long thought that we root for laundry.
You root for laundry and for the area where you live.
Right.
A lot of people root for a team because that's just where they grew up, where they're from, whatever. But that's really all you're rooting for. You're not rooting for players because, I mean, look, Danny Woodhead played for the Jets last Monday night. Mm-hmm. 2 days later, he's a Patriot. Or, you know, a week later, he's a Patriot. I mean, so did Patriots fans hate Danny Woodhead a week ago because he was on the Jets, and now all of a sudden they love him because he's going to be potentially Kevin Falk's replacement? You see what I mean?
That does sound kind of ludicrous.
We watch pro sports to be entertained. And when the product isn't entertaining us, we don't watch. We have better things to do. If you're going to tell me I have something wonderful, a great product to give you to allow you to spend 3 hours of your Sunday, it's going to be really worth your while, like 2007.
Mm-hmm.
People wanted to see that because they knew they were going to be entertained. When they know they're not going to be entertained, it's tougher to get motivated to dedicate 3 hours to that.
Right.
So I don't fault them at all for feeling that way.
Well, I'd kind of like to have fans' opinions of themselves today. That's really kind of what I'm looking at. It sounds kind of crazy, but in all honesty, because, you know, some of the emails that I sorted through yesterday were starting to head this direction. I heard, Pete on his show yesterday talk a little about that as well. And then hearing you guys at the tail end of PFW today, I'm thinking, you know what, let's do a little self-examination here. So I'm going to ask our listeners, I'm going to ask our fans who are paying attention today, I'm going to ask them to self-evaluate. And what do you think, the expectation should be from a fan's perspective of the Patriots, of this franchise, of this organization? Are the Patriots meeting your expectations? Are they not meeting your expectations as a fan? If not, where are they not meeting them? Is it in competitiveness? Is it in their choices? Is it in their selections? I mean, it's all fair game here, realizing that obviously you have a voice. We're giving you a chance to have your voice heard in this particular venue. But at the same time, trying to keep some realism about it as well, knowing full well that, you know, you hire people to conduct especially the football business of this franchise for a specific reason. Guys like Bill Belichick make decisions like they do because they are hired to make those decisions. And, you know, it's all going, kind of goes back to the, in Bill we trust mantra that has, you know, been followed for the better part of the last decade here. Nobody really questions the emperor. And yet I made the point yesterday that, you know, I think a little bit yesterday, the emperor was showing he had no clothes on. So I'm looking for a little self-examination is really what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And I want fans to kind of get a sense of where fans are coming from, and is it realistic? Is it unrealistic? Is it fair, some of the criticism? Is it fair to be angry? Is it fair to say, I'm not going to follow this team anymore because they just suck, or they're not going to win? I mean, they're only going to go 7-9. They'll never make the playoffs. I'm done with them. I mean, is it fair to say that? Is that a realistic thing, or do you feel like it's just someone who's just spouting off and using this as a forum to, you know, make their feelings known? And again, that's part of why we're here. We want people to vent. We're here to try to, you know, not necessarily talk you down out of the tree, but we're here also to try to, I think, maybe bring some reason into why things have happened the way that they have. And what could, we can always surmise our best educated guess based on our observations of this team, why they are happening and what could possibly happen next. That's why we're here. That's why you and I have jobs in this particular instance. And so I'm curious to note how fans might see that and how they see their role in deciding what this team should be and shouldn't be doing. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us here in the program. 508-543-7610. 7482. That's the ACE ticket hotline. Yeah, baby. 508-543-7482. And you can also Facebook chat us as well. You know, I don't know. I mean, every once in a while, and I think it probably happens annually, to be honest with you, Eric, just about annually we do a sort of a self-examination from the fans and, oh, you know, I think we're being fair, or I don't think we're being fair, or so-and-so who just said this or who just emailed that is, you know, totally off the wall and here's why. But I think it's always kind of good to get a sort of a temperature of you know, of followers of the fandom. And I realize that this is probably a little bit early in the year. After all, this is only week three. There is a ton of football to be played. So it's probably unfair to really put a label on anything at this stage of the game. I assume you would agree with that.
Yeah, it's still early for them to turn things around. But the forecast at the moment doesn't look good. Based on what we've seen.
Yet you and I said on opening week, if this team found a way to be 2-2 at the off week break,
right,
then we should all be happy, and that this team would probably find itself in the thick of things for the AFC East title.
And do you both still feel that way?
Yeah,
I do.
Two and two is realistic. 2-2 is a realistic mark for the to get at the bye week.
Let me ask you this: what if the Patriots lost this week but then beat Miami? Would that change your feelings about that at all?
It would depend on how they lost and won those games. If you understand my meaning. If they lose a squeaker and a heartbreaker to Buffalo, hey, you got to chalk it up. That's a division game. They're always tough. You're going to have those kind of moments. If they go down to Miami and win big and hold the Dolphins offense to, you know, a meager amount of points, then the defense has stepped up, then maybe I'm feeling a little bit better about the forecast. But if they lose and win the way they have been the last 2 weeks, then nothing's changed in my opinion.
What if they go down, what if they beat Buffalo convincingly at home and somehow find a way to win in Miami, Eric?
Well, then, you know, shoot.
That's a best-case scenario.
You know, that's a whole other ball of wax.
I'm asking, will you change your opinion and your overall projected record for the team at that point, at 3-1 going into the bye?
Probably not, because they have much better teams that they're going to face later on this year.
Fair enough.
So if they manage to go 3-1 rather than 2-2, your overall one loss mark, and I think you picked them at 8-8.
That's right.
That won't change?
No.
It shouldn't change by a game?
No, because I think they're going to
fail. You don't think they could be 9-7? So you're telling me then if they lose...
Oh, give or take a game. Sure, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Give or take
That's
a game.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. I predicted them 8-8 in the paper, and I on the radio said give or take a game, so they could be as bad as 7-9. They could be as good as 9-7. I think.
Okay, well, you know, frankly, I think 9-7 may have a chance to win this division. Now,
yeah, I think it might. Actually,
of course, it depends on how well Miami continues to play. Miami's off to a good start,
and the Jets.
And the Jets are 1-1, and certainly I think everybody will be following that one this weekend as well. By the way, I like getting the season started with division games, and I think I'm going to love
put all your cards
division
on the table
games at the end.
Yeah,
I really have to hand it to the NFL office and the office of the commissioner for, you know, trying to keep some integrity about the game and keeping teams from tanking games in the end and resting guys so much unless they're, you know, six games up with four to play or whatever. I think they've attacked that problem about as well as it can be addressed by, you know, scheduling the way that they have, because you start with rivalries and you end with rivalries. And as far as I'm concerned, I love these rivalries. The two teams on the calendar, on the schedule every year that I want to beat the most are the Jets and the Dolphins, and sometimes not necessarily in that order.
Yeah. Well, on paper, it certainly looks like it's the right thing to do. Let's hope that it, in reality, plays out that way, that the games are competitive later in the year, that, you know, there aren't teams that have already clinched by mid-November or whenever, you know, early December, and that they'll actually be meaningful, you know. If one team is, you know, 13-0 when they start playing their division games at the end, and the other team is struggling at, you know, 3-10, then those division games aren't going to really mean anything anyway.
Yeah.
But we'll see how it plays out. I have a feeling it's going to be tight, and I think you're right. I think it's going to be meaningful games at the end of December and that first weekend of the new year.
Still to come. Were you able to get out to practice for a bit today?
Yes, actually. Upper Fields, where the training camp is held, as they have been the last couple of weeks. Full pads once again. Only two missing players were the same two as has been the case recently. Terrence Wheatley with his foot and Nick Kazier with his back. Obviously, Kevin Faulk, we already knew, wasn't going to be out there. They only added one player, but that was before Faulk's announcement. That was to the practice squad. They added Carson Butler, who was with them during training camp, the tight end from Michigan. So they have eight practice squad guys, 52 active roster guys, you know, without Faulk being there. So they have to make a move at some point this week, John. Add somebody else, just like last week when they traded Maroney and they were down to 52. So be interesting to see what they do, whether they pull up from the practice squad or they look elsewhere in the on the market to bring somebody in.
All right. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Facebook chat is open as well. Let's pause here for a little timeout. Eric and I will come back and start looking at these Buffalo Bills. We'll get to some emails and more coming up inside the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Just found out American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results.
We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap.
I realize you love yourself more than you could ever love me. So go and tell your friends that I'm obsessive and crazy. That's fine, you won't mind if I stay. And by the way, I hate that stupid old pickup truck you never let me drive. You're a redneck heartbreak who's really bad at lying. So watch me strike a match on all my wasted time. As far as I'm concerned, you're just...
Hey! Don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but I,
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you.
you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Yeah, don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Well, I suppose what we're talking about is a little sweet emotion, wouldn't you say, Eric Scalavino?
Well, it's emotion. I don't know how sweet it is.
Pretty good lead into this particular part of the program.
Yeah.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook. I'm John Rook, along with Eric Scalavino of Patriots Football Weekly. Hour number two of the program, scheduled to be joined by Mark Kelso, former Buffalo Bills defensive back, who now serves as their analyst on their Buffalo Bills radio network. So we'll jump into some of the Bills issues as well. Let me touch on a couple of things via Facebook here really quickly. William sends me this note by saying, what do fans expect? Win. We don't care how in the end. As for Brady's earlier comments at fans leaving, screw him. If the Patriots are beating the Sisters of Mercy Middle School and fans are not entertained, ... Kind of harsh, don't you think?
Yeah, a little bit.
Wow.
I've never understood the whole leaving a game early thing.
Well, frankly, you know, we did talk about this last week, and I think you and I even mentioned a little bit, but I'm just, you know, I understand to an extent why some fans would leave early at Gillette. I know this was a big topic of conversation last week on sports radio in Boston, and we actually talked about it the day before that it became such a topic. Who knows? I think we're trendsetters around here anyway. But I get the impression that our fans, since they built Gillette Stadium, have just gotten, my term for it is fat and sassy, that they've just gotten complacent, that they've been spoiled.
Spoiled, yeah, spoiled.
Very, very spoiled. They're used to it. They want the amenities. They like the stuff. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, you know, the team's been good. Keep winning. Keep it going, and I'll keep giving you my dollars or whatever. I mean, you know, I don't know what the deal is, but I've just gotten the impression that that's how fans are. And I think Brady happened to be glancing up at the crowd. I mean, you know, I heard someone on the radio say, Brady shouldn't be paying attention to the stands. He should be paying attention to the football field. Well, now, come on. How stupid a comment is that?
It really
you're
going
to tell me that you're down on the field and you don't? You absolutely don't look in the stands? Let me give you, for instance, anybody recall the drive that Joe Montana led the San Francisco 49ers on to beat Cincinnati? And him and the story goes in the huddle before the game-winning drive, he called all of his players to look up in the stands and said, hey, look, there's John Candy.
Right.
You remember that?
Yes, I do.
That's a true story.
That's a true
and
story.
All he did, and all he did was lead his team down the field and win the Super Bowl.
Yep.
So for anybody to say, well, they shouldn't be looking at the stands, they may be paying attention, you know, the field. That's the biggest bunch of crap I think I've ever heard in my entire life.
It
These
really
guys
is.
Are pros.
I agree with you.
They can concentrate on just about anything. I mean, have you heard of being, you know, multidimensional? Have you heard of being, you know, a multitasker?
Especially during timeouts, you know, breaks in the action. You see these guys sometimes. There are some guys in the huddle out on the field, but they're just kind of standing around waiting for the timeout to be over with, the TV timeout or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a team timeout that the coach calls, he brings the offense over, the defense over, and they're discussing things. But TV timeouts, the 11 guys who are going to be on the field for the next play are typically on the field, bouncing around, waiting for the timeout to be over.
Right.
And that's a perfect opportunity to look around, to catch your breath for a second, you know, focus on something else. You're not going to be focused on the game plan and the next play every single second of the entire 3 hours of that game.
Right.
It's ridiculous. It's not, it's inhuman.
Well,
it's unrealistic.
I understand why Brady feels the way he does as well, because quite frankly, it's a little disconcerting to a player to see all the people get up and leave.
Of course.
And,
and they were winning.
They were winning.
It's not like they were
getting
losing.
Up and leaving. I mean, I understand if you've got, a 3 hour drive, if you're heading back to Bar Harbor, Maine or something, and you come down for the game, or you're heading back to, Greenwich, Connecticut or something, then I guess I can understand to an extent you're wanting to get a jump on the traffic. I can understand it. But for the overwhelming majority, to me, that's nothing but a spoiled, fickle fan. That's all it is. That's all it is. Just wanting to get out before the traffic. Oh, the team's going to win. Oh, the team's going to lose. That's fine. We'll take your money,
fine. But that's the other thing, John.
But that's ridiculous. I mean, I feel badly for the players who are out there busting their butts a little bit. That's all.
Well, I just think you're hurting yourself more than you're hurting anybody else. You paid all this money to park, to secure your tickets, to buy whatever concessions you bought during the game. You've invested a lot of money in that afternoon. Why cut it short? You never know what you're going to see on the field. You could miss the most amazing play in the history of the NFL. People will talk about it for decades and into the next century. You could have been there for it, and you missed it because you decided to leave early. You never know what's going to happen in a game. You should never, unless you have like an emergency or something. I'm a big proponent of staying for the entire game. Get your money's worth. You're cheating yourself by leaving early. That's just how I feel. And believe me, I was a fan going to Patriots games in those 1-14, 1-15, 2-14 terrible seasons back in the late 80s and early 90s. We stayed for every minute, every second of those 3 hours. We were there. And because we loved football, we just wanted to see football. And even if they were losing or whatever, you come to see the other teams. We saw the San Francisco 49ers during their heyday. They played here in Foxborough, the old stadium.
Right.
It was exciting to see those guys who'd won Super Bowls and to see them at work live and in person just a few feet away from you. We saw the Buffalo Bills who went to those four Super Bowls live and in person. We sat right at the visitor's entrance in the old stadium. If you remember the tunnel, the ramp that led up to their locker.
Yeah.
We would sit right in that corner section right there. So we could see these players' faces in great detail. We were only a few feet away. We saw Jim Kelly and Daryl Talley and Bruce Smith and Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed and all these guys up close. You don't always just come to see your team. You're coming to see the entire experience. You're coming to see players who are going to be in the Hall of Fame. You're coming to see players who could potentially be Patriots because they get cut and are picked up the next week or get traded or whatever. You're coming to see everything. It's the whole thing from tailgating through the game and into the end afterwards when a lot of people tailgate after the game too. And if it's a 1 o'clock game, you turn on the TV in the parking lot and you can see some of the 4 o'clock games. It's the whole experience. You're missing out. You're cheating yourself by leaving early.
No question about that. Absolutely no question about that. Let me share one other Facebook chat with you here. This one comes from Paul, who says, John, Paul in
Perillo?
London here. Well, it might very well be. It says Paul in London here, though. I'd be interested in your and Eric's view about the run defense so far and how you see them holding up against C.J. Spiller. Well, quite frankly, we don't know how much Spiller's going to play because, what did he get, one snap of the ball last week?
I didn't see his final stats, but I don't think he did anything for the first 2 weeks.
No, he wasn't in there. I mean, Fred Jackson played, Marshawn Lynch played.
Yeah.
But that was it. So I'm a little, that was one of the things I was going to ask, Kelso, what's up with the running back rotation?
Yeah.
And, what are the plans for the immediate future here? And, where do you see CJ Spiller fitting in? Cause quite frankly, I think he's probably, why else would they draft the guy unless they thought he was going to be the guy that was going to, end up, being the number one before too long.
Right. Yeah. I think just from the cursory look that I gave his stats, he just seemed ineffective. He had something like 6 or 7 touches in the first week or even combined in the second week, so he hasn't really gotten the opportunities for whatever reason, and when he hasn't really done anything with them. And, you know, to his credit, he's playing on perhaps one of the worst teams in the league. So defenses are going to focus in on him when he gets the ball because he's such a dynamic player.
Right.
It's just, again, it's just a little too early to tell.
It is a little bit early to tell. But I would say that, you know, no matter who the Patriots are facing, starting in that backfield, that with Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, getting the call this week and Chan Gailey deciding to make a switch at quarterback again for Trent Edwards being, I guess, the biggest news that the Bills have made thus far this week, that you would think that there would be a fair share of carries by whomever is in there at running back.
Yeah.
And it's still going to boil down to whether or not the Patriots' run defense can make Ryan Fitzpatrick beat them. I mean, to me, that has to be like one of the underlying themes to the week.
I'd be a little concerned if I were the Patriots defense then, because I think Fitzpatrick has proven that he can be an effective quarterback in this league. Maybe not consistently as you'd like, but effective enough. And the way this pass defense has played, I wouldn't want another quarterback throwing the ball the majority of the time against them. I'd be a little apprehensive, to say the least, John.
I'm kind of getting a little pessimism from you too, buddy. I don't know what the deal is here, but
it's not pessimism, it's realism.
Okay.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
When things are good and you're saying they're bad, that's pessimism. When things are bad and you're saying that everything's great, that's ridiculously rosy optimism. When you're telling things the way they are, that's realism.
No, stop telling lies. You are an habitual liar.
It's just the way it is, my friend.
Yeah, I know. All right.
Don't want to sugarcoat anything.
Then what are your initial thoughts about how this
team... Honestly, let me just jump in.
It is what it is.
I was thinking of you during the Jets game, because every time they threw the ball to Butler,
yeah,
and he was getting...
toasted?
Yeah, I kept thinking, boy, John Rook is... I wish I could hear John on Tuesday. He's going to go out, "See, I told you so."
Well, I guess we could... You know, I'm sure that I had like four or five Facebook messages like in the minutes after the game was over saying, "Rook, you were right on about Darius Butler. He's terrible and he sucks," and all this kind of stuff. You know, and I actually came out yesterday and I wanted to say, look, the purpose of this is not to throw Darius Butler under the bus. The purpose of this is to point out that, in my opinion, he was not what the Patriots needed, that they made a poor selection, and that, you know, could he be a good defensive back at some point? Yeah, probably. But to thrust him in this role, especially with Lee Bodden's injury, I just think that, you know, they should have gone deeper
in terms of bringing in some help
in the defensive backfield, and they didn't do it. And they're putting too much of a burden on a guy like Butler who is not equipped to handle it.
Should they not have gotten rid of Sean Springs then?
No,
sucky,
I don't think
sucky,
so.
Sucky.
I don't think so.
And nobody else has picked him up, right?
To my knowledge, at this stage, no.
I don't think he's in the league right now.
I don't think he is either.
And if he is, I don't know if he's playing much, because I haven't really heard anything about him since he left here. I think Kevin's trying to check on that right now.
Is he?
Yeah, trying to get a status report on
Sean Springs.
Yeah.
Well, you know, obviously, if it hasn't already crossed their mind, then it's probably not going to. So I don't know. Do we wait for Will Height to play a little bit more?
I think we know what we've got with him.
Okay. He's still a free agent.
Nobody's picked him up, right? So I think that, yeah, I think that kind of tells you what, you know, the Patriots and everybody else think of Sean Springs at this point. He wasn't terrible when he played last year here. You know, if I recall.
No, he just...
Problem
I don't
was
think
he was hurt.
He was hurt a lot of the time. He just didn't play a lot, that's all, because I'm not sure he was really able to play.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
Strange.
Oh, yeah. It actually says he's pondering going to law school and becoming a player agent.
Really?
Yeah, I think he said that a couple of times last year when he was here, that he was thinking about doing that eventually.
So I didn't realize that he was kind of... he was one of those guys that, you know, really... thought a lot about his education in that regard. That's pretty good, I have to admit.
Mm.
I have to admit.
Well, so I know what I have to... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so then where do you feel like this game is going to break down in your estimation at this early stage of the game on Sunday?
Well, last week I think we kind of came to the consensus that whichever team scored 20 points or more was going to win, and we were proven right in that. And we both kind of thought it was the Jets, if I recall, right? Did you pick the Jets too, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So we were kind of right in that regard. This week, I think it's going to be...
All right, we can put that away for a while.
I think it's going to be a higher scoring game this week because the Bills just have no playmakers on defense, and I think New England's offense will probably score in the 30-point range. But I also think they have the potential to give up in the 20-point range. So I think you can expect a lot of offense on both sides of the ball this week, John.
Okay. So you really think that this has the ability to be like one of those 35-31 shootouts? Can the Bills generate that kind of offense based on the fact that they haven't hit 200 yards in total offense in a single game?
No. I think the Patriots will score in the 30-point range, and I think the Bills will get into the 20s, but I don't think that they'll be close enough to threaten to win the game. So I think it'll probably be like a 10-point victory margin for New England. I haven't settled on a final score yet, but I'm thinking that the Bills will at least be able to score some points. I don't know if they'll score enough to be competitive throughout, but I think they'll manage to do some damage to this defense.
Yeah.
Just New England's offense will do a lot more damage to the Bills' defense.
Well, I'm kind of leaning toward that, at least at this stage of the game. I'm anxious to continue sort of reading up on the Bills, and obviously they're changing some things over this week. Bringing a new quarterback. They're 0-2. They haven't generated any offense. Chan Gailey undoubtedly is already starting to feel some pressure, which is right. It sounds like it's all par for the course. See, my biggest problem here is the one thing that I haven't really the reason I haven't gone lock, stock, and barrel, so to speak, with the Patriots in this game has to do with the fact that, at some point in time, the win streak's got to end, doesn't it? It seems like they have.
It's been 13. They've won 13 in a row, which is tied for the fourth.
They haven't
longest
lost to the Bills since the opening game of 2003.
Right. So they have the tied for the fourth longest winning streak in a series in NFL history. If they win again Sunday, they will move up to tie the third longest streak in history. And I think they will achieve that mark, John. I don't see them losing to the Bills this week.
I just keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. I mean, because it can't continue. It has to, and it'll probably happen when we least expect it'll happen.
Yeah, well.
And I'm hearing all this week on local sports talk radio, and some of the fans, are already, chiming in here and said, do you see in any circumstance, the Patriots losing this game? And my answer is, well, of course I do. This is the NFL, number one. Number two, this is the Patriots. And so anything can happen. This is why we play the games. Yeah. You don't mail anything in. Right. We saw the Bills last year in the season opener put a scare into this team, and they probably should have won that game.
Oh, yeah, the Monday night opener, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, frankly, they were very, very fortunate to win. The Patriots were last
year.
They
were, yeah.
And we all thought it would be a walkover. So right. I'm just saying, can it happen? Yeah, absolutely it can happen. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll happen when we probably least expect it. So for people to say, I don't see the Patriots losing this game, you're wishing. Now, ultimately, you put everything down on paper, it probably does look like a 10 to a 14-point win for the Patriots. Mm-hmm. I mean, the odds makers today have the spread up to, what, 13.5?
Haven't seen it.
I think it's 13.5 is what I heard this morning anyway. Wow. And if that's the case, I mean, that's extraordinary, first of all.
Yeah.
Especially you're coming off of a loss. That just shows you that, Vegas has no faith in Buffalo whatsoever.
Yeah.
None.
Rightfully
zero.
So at this point.
It may very well be that Buffalo ends up being the worst team in the NFL. It's possible, I suppose. But I just, man, I...
I'll give you my score prediction tomorrow when we
Yes. I hope that you will.
Oh, I certainly will. I'm still mulling it over, but I think I'm
honing in on it.
Absolutely.
All right. Very good. So, E, thanks. Thanks
no
as
problem.
Always, buddy.
No problem. We'll see you. Are you in studio tomorrow?
I'll be in studio mañana, so...
All right. We'll catch up then.
We'll continue to break it down tomorrow.
All right.
All right. Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly. Stop here for a timeout. Let's continue to get your emails, webradio@patriots.com. Our question of the day has to do with being sort of self-judging of fans. I mean, are fans, in your estimation, as a fan yourself, are fans being too tough on the team right now? That's really it in a nutshell. Are they being too tough on the team? Are your expectations unreasonable, or are they realistic, and why? Tell me why you're basing your reason and your answer. Want to know the why behind the if they are, well, then why? If they're not, then why? Give me your thoughts on the fans and whether or not expectations are unreasonable. What is a reasonable expectation for you as a fan with this team? Webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is the phone number. And you can Facebook chat us up as well right here inside the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards, first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A., Bank of America, N.A., member PIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Welcome back inside the playbook. We're in hour number two for a Wednesday. Hump day, right in the middle of the week. Game week number 3 for the Patriots. Buffalo Bills coming to Gillette Stadium, 1 o'clock Eastern Time kickoff this coming Sunday as the Pats try to get back on the winning side of the ledger and move their record to 2-1 after the disappointment at the Jets, the new Meadowlands, losing 28-14 this past Sunday. Let's see if we can sneak in some emails here. We're scheduled, again, to speak with Mark Kelso from the Bills Radio Network coming up at some point in time this hour. He's traveling, and so we hope that we can nail him down as soon as he is in one spot long enough where we can chat with him for 5 or 10 minutes. So that's what we're waiting on for Mark Kelso. In the meantime, got plenty of time for you to join the program. Webradio at patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482. The telephone number, Facebook chat us as well. This one comes from Mark in Oklahoma, who says, when you compare the Patriots and Jets roster, the Patriots are better at quarterback and wide receiver. That's it. Jets are better at running back, offensive line, defensive line, and linebacker, and even secondaries. Maybe a push at tight end. But that means the Patriots, for the Patriots to beat the Jets, Brady has to outplay Sanchez by a lot. That didn't happen on Sunday. We saw the result. Frankly, that's probably as simply put forward a reason for what happened on Sunday as I've seen. Because I think Mark has a point. You compare the Patriots roster and the Jets roster side by side. Do we really have any advantages other than at quarterback and wide receiver? I don't think so. At running back? No. Offensive line? You might get away with a push there, but frankly, I'd say no. Defensive line, even without Chris Jenkins, I'd say no. Linebackers, that could also be a push, but again, probably not. Secondary, definitely not. So Brady he would have to beat Sanchez by a lot. He'd have to outplay him by a lot in order to win. And obviously his rating was about, what, 40 points, 50 points under Sanchez's. So there you go. It's probably a simpler reason for why they lost the game as you can probably get. This one comes from Stuart. Guys, my name's Stuart. I'm listening to your show in the UK. Would love to get a shout-out. Hey, there's your shout-out, Stuart. Thanks for the email. Gutted to hear about Falk being out for the season. It seems we have no luck with injuries the last few years, with Brady and Welker missing seasons or key parts of the season. We have a good squad going forward, but he is a big loss. And about the fans leaving, that is a thing I hate over here when I go watch my local soccer team. But if you pay for your ticket, I suppose it is your right. But I will watch my team that I support till the end. I had a hard time watching the Patriots at the Jets game on TV, but I support them no matter what. Hopefully we beat the Bills and go Pats. You know, that again is kind of putting it simply, but it really hits the nail on the head. And Stuart, thanks for listening. Thanks for sending the email, and don't be a stranger. You know, you pay for your ticket. It's your right to do, really, within reason, whatever it is that you do. And if that means you have to get up and you leave early, then okay. I suppose, hey, it's your hard-earned cash. If you feel like, you know, it's better for you to be there. Listen, if it were me, I've always been this way. Whether I paid for a ticket or not, and I've paid for my fair share over the years, and obviously there are some that I haven't paid for. But regardless of whether I paid for it or not, I'm one of those kind of people that stays to the bitter end. I got to stay to the end. Even if I know what the result is going to be, I always feel like I missed something or I've missed out on something, and it's not complete unless I stay until the clock ticks zero. Now, when the clock hits zero, I might be one of the first up and out of my seat trying to race to get out of the door if I really got to be someplace. But unless it's, you know, like a family matter of some sort, you know, or a family function, or I got to get back, you know, at home for some reason or whatever, I'm staying to the event to the bitter end. I've always been that way, and I will probably always be that way. You pay for the ticket, I suppose that you're right. But I don't blame some of the Patriots for, you know, wondering about that, especially Brady last week. And, you know, some of the disconcern, some of the, I don't want to say hate, but let's just say some of the anger that has come out from the fans over the course of the last couple of days since the Jets game. You know, it's like, oh, I'm through with these guys. Well, okay. See you when you come back, you know. Be plenty of room on the bandwagon for you whenever things do turn around. And maybe they don't turn around this year. But what's a fan supposed to be anyway? Fan is short for fanatic. Someone who's fanatical about their team means they should, in theory, follow them through thick and through thin. You root, as Eric said, and I've long maintained this as well, we all root for laundry. We root for colors. We root for our team. And Danny Woodhead, newest member of the Patriots running back staff, is a perfect example of that. This time a week ago, he was a member of the Jets. So now that he's wearing Patriots blue and silver, we're not going to root for him? No, that's not the way it works. We root for him because he's wearing our colors. So we root for the laundry. We don't necessarily root for the individual. Sure, there are some individuals we root for. Brady. Kevin Falk, certainly, as we've talked about today. But we always root for the colors. So when you get tired of the colors, then I question whether or not you are an FAN. Again, keeping in mind what the word fan is supposed to stand for. I question it. I don't think you are. You might be an observer, casual observer of that, but I question whether or not you're a true fan. John says, a fan who only follows a team because they are winning is not a fan. They're bandwagon jumpers. People who stuck it out in the bleak years. People who hung their heads in 1985. People who hated the Packers in 96. People who sit in the snow games, listen on the radio, schedule their lives around Sundays in the fall. Those are fans. These people who jump ship in the face of adversity are nothing. No faith, no belief, and I personally have no time for them. That's what John says. What say you? Webradio@patriots.com. This one comes from Brian in New Hampshire. The loss of Kevin Falk is huge. My question now is, do the Pats regret trading Maroney? Now we only have three running backs. Two of them are pretty old. The other one isn't that great. Well, you know, hindsight is 20/20. I would say, Brian, if we all had the benefit of having hindsight, then my guess is the Patriots don't make this move, right? I mean, if they knew somehow that Kevin Falk was going to be hurt, if they knew if anybody was going to be hurt, they don't make this move. Because, you know, Maroney is obviously still a body that, you know, was relatively healthy, although keep in mind now, he was not active before the Patriots traded him with a thigh injury. Maybe that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I don't know. And we'll probably never know. I don't think they regret trading Maroney even, and again, just my opinion here, even in light of the fact that Kevin Falk is gone for the season. I don't think that they regret trading him. I think they felt like it was the move they had to make when they made it. You always make moves when you make them because you feel like it's in the best interest of the club or the situation. So, no, regret, probably not. You're certainly right about the numbers in the running back roster. We'll see if, you know, Woodhead becomes active this week, if he gets activated from the practice squad, and whether or not he's even active for the game on Sunday. Certainly no way of telling at this stage. But you'll certainly see Taylor and Morris and Green Ellis, all three, will get playing time on Sunday. And probably considerable playing time at that. And Sammy Morris, at least for the time being, will probably be the guy that you see in third down situations. Now, can he catch the ball okay? Yeah, he's adequate at it. But I think Morris is in there primarily because of his ability to block that Kevin Falk was pretty good at, and his ability to chip off of the charging linebackers, anybody that might be blitzing in on Brady. I think that's a large part of the reason why you'll see Morris in on third down and or obvious passing situations. And who knows, you probably see him, you know, try to catch a few balls out of the backfield as well because he'll be thrust into that role. And something that Bill Belichick said earlier today at the stadium was, you know, it's not going to be one person. I'll paraphrase here, but it's not going to be one person that is going to fill in for Kevin Falk. It's not necessarily going to be, oh, well, we lose Kevin Falk, we're inserting Danny Woodhead into the lineup. It really doesn't work out to be that simple. This is where, you know, frankly, I think Belichick is spot on, that it's got to be a collective, collaborative effort from all of the running backs in order to replace Kevin. It starts with, you know, probably Fred Taylor getting a little more time. It starts with Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis definitely getting more time, and it starts with Sammy Morris getting, you know, inserted into the lineup in usual Kevin Faulk-like situations, as I just explained. So because of that, that in itself is the collective group as it now stands. For better or for worse, that's what the Patriots have at running back right now. Can't do anything about it. So they're kind of stuck with it. I mean, it's really the way it is. But it will have to be a collective slash collaborative effort on all their parts, as was stated earlier today, in order to really replace what Faulk meant in the Patriots lineup. Bad Kevin sends this, John and Eric, although Eric just left Kevin. Great to not have to listen to D-Bag and Paul and Fred argue for 20 minutes about nothing. Okay, thank you. Anyway, I am from Illinois. Being near so many Bears and Rams fans, I can tell you I am proud to be a Patriots fan. It is great to be the fan of an organization that you know has a chance every year to make the playoffs. And I want to say this. How about in Robert Kraft we trust? How can you not give him the credit for this team? We are the winningest team in the time that he has taken over as owner. Belichick is great, but let's give Kraft some credit. That's a very good point. Something that, you know, whenever we're doing public functions for the Patriots and, you know, and if I happen to be emceeing the function and I'm introducing Mr. Kraft, part of the thing that I usually say about Mr. Kraft is that, you know, he is basically owned the team during the most prolific portion of the Patriots' history, most successful portion in not only New England Patriots' history, but the winningest team in the entire NFL since he's owned the team. And so when you have that kind of cachet going for you, then I think that's a huge part of the reason why Robert Kraft is looked at as one of the most valuable owners in the entire league. He's respected as much as anybody is in terms of ownership, not only in the NFL, but in all of professional sports. Bad Kevin also says, I think we are a playoff team. We're hopefuls for the AFC East title. I'm not so sure that the three horses in the East are going to stand out in the league. They're going to beat up on each other. I think all three teams could be in the playoffs. A little stretch, but realistic. I'm not on a ledge. I took a lot of crap this week, but hey, I'm not a Cowboys fan who took a lot more crap than I did. Yeah, that's very true. See, this kind of goes back, and thanks for the email, Bad Kevin, but this always goes back to, you know, the old adage that I'm fond of repeating probably a couple of times every year when things are going bad or when things seem to be going poorly or at the very least, let's say, things aren't going your direction. No matter how bad you have it, somebody else always has it worse. Somebody else always has it worse. Isn't that usually the case in just about all walks of life? I mean, you know, take into consideration, you know, the Buffalo Bills, this week's opponent. They're 0-2. They haven't generated yet 200 yards offense in a single game in either of their first two games. They're already making a switch at quarterback. Trent Edwards is out. Ryan Fitzpatrick is in. Is that not a panic move if you've ever seen one? The fate of the Dallas Cowboys as well. Here's a team that, you know, a lot of people I know, maybe even you, picked as a potential Super Bowl team out of the NFC. You know, a chance to become the first team to ever play in their home stadium in the Super Bowl this year. The Cowboys are 0-2. And they probably should be 2-0. I've seen both of their games. They're just not playing very smart. I don't know if that comes from, you know, their head coach. I don't know if it comes, I frankly think it comes from the overall makeup of the roster. I just don't think that the Cowboys have smart players. I just don't think they do. I just don't think they're very smart. I don't know that they're selfish, but I just don't think that they're brilliant geniuses either. But hey, you know what? Whatever, right? You know, so at least those are two pretty good examples right there. You know, you can probably come up with a few others, but suffice it to say that somebody out there has it worse than you do as a Patriots fan. And so that's usually how I sort of, you know, rationalize things away in terms of, you know, well, it's not so bad, or, oh, God, it's really terrible. Sean says, John, as a fan, I look at it like we have a window with Brady and Bill, and I want it to be all out while they are here. I want all the players here that they need to make it to a championship. I think he says, I want all the players here to know that they need to make it to a championship. After that, we can go back to the 70s. Okay. Well, I think the mark of a good franchise and the mark of strong ownership is the ability not to regress. And I think, as to a previous emailer's comments here about the Kraft family, that speaks to that. They have, at the very least, kept a level of competitiveness afloat, even when this team hasn't been a Super Bowl-caliber team. And that's a credit to your ownership and to your franchise structure, which would include coaches and personnel and all that kind of stuff. I don't think you necessarily have to go back to the way things were and bottom out and go 1-15 again. But, you know, you do like the fact that, you know, your team can be competitive every year. And certainly you'd have to say the Patriots fall into that category right now. Over the course of the last 17 seasons that the Kraft family has owned this franchise, you'd have to say, every year. And even though a couple of years didn't quite turn out that way, but every year this team had at least expectations of being competitive. And except for, I think at that time, what, two losing seasons? Thinking of right off the top of my head, is that right, two? And I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know. I'm sure somebody can help me out with that. But, I mean, that's a pretty good track record. That means you're expected to win, and you generally have won and been competitive and at the very least been in the playoff hunt every year. And that's a pretty good level of consistency. And, again, it speaks to, you know, ownership and the principles behind said ownership that they have for the organization as a whole. I think that's very good. All right. This one comes from our friend Nathan, who says, John, how many wins do you think that we can get in a row this year? Let's start with one, Nathan. But he says, we got 18 in a row in 2007. We got four in 2008. We got three in 2009. How many in 2010? Any more than two in a row? What about losses? He says, do you project any back-to-back losses with this current schedule? I know it's difficult to tell this early, but play the game. Schedule's below. All right. I'll play the game, Nathan. Here we go. Play the game. Obviously, won one and then lost one. So I think we probably, at least just for argument's sake now, let's say you win one this week. And again, let's say for argument's sake, you lose one at Miami. All right. And then you get to the week. Then you get to the bye week, week four, one, two, three, four, actually week five, excuse me, at 2-2. Then the Ravens come up on Sunday, October 17th, at home. I just, right now, I mean, barring any more injuries, anything that's unforeseen, I kind of like the Patriots in that one based on the fact that, you know, they remember the Ravens really kicking their ass last year in the playoffs. But then again, you know, so you're still looking at win one, lose one, win one, lose one, win one, and then I think the next week they lose one at San Diego. Then you come back home against Minnesota on October 31st, and the Vikings are also one of those teams that I was just talking about, that no matter how bad you've got it, there's somebody else out there that has it worse. The Vikings are also 0-2, and Brett Favre is underachieving, and maybe he's finally at the end of his competitive rope. For whatever it's worth, as of today, knowing what we know, and I'm not really trying to project a month into the future here, but let's just say, for argument's sake, that's a win. All right, so then you're back on a win-one, lose-one situation. Your following game on Sunday, November 7th, is at Cleveland. Frankly, I think there's a chance there to get two in a row. Then on Sunday, November the 14th, you're at Pittsburgh. I want to see how this Pittsburgh team, before I really make a judgment, I want to see how this Pittsburgh team, you know, rallies around Ben Roethlisberger when he returns to that lineup, number one. Playing at Pittsburgh, as we all know, is very, very tough to do. It always has been, although the Patriots have had some decent success with that. Let's just go with the argument here, though, all right? It's a road game. Patriots have, you know, not had great success. They've lost 9 of their last 11 on the road. So I'm going to say loss. So that stops a two-game win streak. Then you come back home against Indianapolis on the 21st of November. I'll give the Patriots the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to say win. Then you're at Detroit on Thursday, November the 25th. That's a win. You're back home against the Jets on Monday night, December the 6th. I think the Patriots will be ready for that one. I say that's a win. That's three in a row. Then you're at Chicago on Sunday, December the 12th. It's really hard to look forward, but so I'm going to say loss. That could be a win, but I'm going to say loss. So that stops a three-game winning streak. Then you're back home against the Packers. That could be the one that really hurts the Patriots at home this year. Green Bay is my preseason pick out of the NFC and was my preseason pick out of the NFC to reach the Super Bowl. I had Green Bay and San Diego. Those were my picks. Doesn't sound terribly glamorous, does it? I just thought that both teams and their schedules played out to that point where I thought that, they should be favored. And then you wipe up the season with at Buffalo, win against Miami. At home, I'm going to say win. So you have a chance, Nathan, playing the game as you wanted me to play. I think you got a chance. Indy, Detroit, New York, Chicago, Green Bay, Buffalo, Miami. You have a chance to win 7 in a row. There's a chance. There's a chance to win, to finish out the season winning 7 straight. A chance. I don't think it will happen personally. But, you know, you could drop the Indy game. You could lose the Jets game. You could certainly lose the Bears game. You could lose the Packers. You know, I think you probably win the Lions. You probably win the Bills. You could lose the Dolphins. So, you know, my guess would be you probably are, out of that 7-game stretch, you're probably 5-2. Which means then if you're 5-2 over that last 7, that makes you 5-3, 6-3, 7-3, 7-4, 8-4, and 2-2. That makes you 10-6. So if I could tell you right now that this team was going to finish 10-6, and in the division you would be 4-2. Win 4, lose 2. 10-6 overall. Is that good enough for you at this stage? Does that meet your expectations? Do you think that's good enough to win the division? Is it good enough to get in as a wild card? Probably. Good enough to get in as a wild card? Probably. Is it good enough to win the division? Probably. Certainly you're going to be right there. If you win those last 7 in a row, that's 12-4. And there's no doubt in my mind, if you ripped off 7 in a row to end the season at 12-4, you're the division champion, and you have an outside shot at getting a bye in the opening round of the AFC playoffs. Outside. 12-4, though, probably be good enough to get you at least within a game of consideration of that. So we're looking way ahead, but Nathan, you asked me to play the game, so that's what I'm doing. I'm playing the game. I like doing that. I like playing over-unders, too, you know. You give me some stats or some figures or some predictions or whatever and trying to go over-under with them. I think that's all pretty good. It's all fun to do. So, hey, it's all pure conjecture at this point anyway, so I like it. Nathan sent me a note on the fans issue that we were talking about a little bit earlier. Different Nathan says, you know, that's a tough question to answer. The fans have sometimes unrealistic expectations because of Belichick and Brady. They cannot do it all. Where the New England Patriots do deserve criticism is they rarely go and acquire free agents. Rarely move up in the draft to get a playmaker. We criticize as fans because the Pats aren't getting potential players that could make a difference. See, now, I think what Nathan's doing here is touching on something that's pretty important because, to me, that's more in an ownership corner. Because if you're not going up to get these players, that tells me that ownership or the brain trust has decided that these players aren't worth paying the money that you have to pay them in order to sign them. So does that mean now that there's not any longer a commitment to go out and get top-flight players because you just don't want to pay them? I mean, we just got through raining hosannas down on the Krafts and the Kraft family. What if I were to tell you that the Krafts have decided unequivocally that they no longer want to pay, that they just don't feel like it's worth it, that because of the impending, you know, CBA negotiations between the ownership and players, that they're trying to batten down the hatches and get ready for, I don't know, nuclear winter, which is really what we're doing. It'd be a winter without football, certainly a fall without football next year. And because they don't see any revenues coming in, they're certainly not going to be willing to spend money on players and or draftees. See, that thought has crossed my mind, and frankly, I think that the Krafts would be bad business people, which I think we all know they are not, but I think they would be bad business people if they didn't at least consider the fact that they might not have much of a season, if anything at all, next year. So I think that might be a nod to kind of looking ahead, to be quite honest with you. I hate to be, you know, a doomsayer, but I'm sure that thought has probably crossed some minds. And I think that's something that probably needs to be taken into consideration when you look at the possibility of spending money on free agents or drafting players, in the top 10 or 15 in next April's draft. Certainly won't see any signees that quick. Gustavo in Brazil sends this email. John, I'm Brazilian and I love football, American football as we call it here in Brazil, and I consider myself a Patriots fan. I live more than 5,000 miles away from Boston and would love to see a Patriots game. Therefore, I don't understand how people don't stay until the end of the games to support our team. And they were winning. What will happen if this team ends up the year with less than a 500 record? People will stop going to the games? Come on! Go Pats! Thanks for the email, Gustavo. I appreciate your taking the time to send it. I also appreciate your support from 5,000 miles away or more. And don't be a stranger here to the program. You can always, if you can't listen to us live from 2 to 4 Eastern time, you can always download the podcast at a later time. And when you get the question of the day, by all means, fire off the email. Or you can send me a Facebook request and chat me up on Facebook, and we'll answer the questions for you. Not a big deal at all. Love to have you. Thanks for being a part of the show. Frankly, you're right. It's kind of silly. If this team finished 7-9 or 6-10, what's going to happen? Are we going to get 20,000 people to turn in their season tickets next year? No. That's stupid. We might get a few. There's still a 50,000-person waiting list for season tickets in Foxborough. That tells me somebody out there wants to see them succeed. Somebody out there wants to be a part of the bandwagon, win, lose, or draw. So I would tell you that, you know, if you're tired of it and you're only going to support a winner or whatever for whatever reason, fine, give your tickets up. There's still a lot of people that are waiting to take your spot. I met with several hundred brand new season ticket holders early this year before the preseason started. And to see the looks on their faces, the enthusiasm, the wide eyes, you know, the handshaking, the back slapping going on, the appreciativeness they were showing, you know, the Patriots and Mr. Kraft and, you know, talking them up as I was and such for their, you know, their new season ticket holder orientation, which, you know, got a chance to meet quite a few of them before the preseason ever got started. You know, that was a lot of fun. It re-energized me because sometimes we get so close to the forest we can't see the trees around here. You know what I mean? And so that helps me, and I think it probably helps those in the marketing staff and those in the front office, and certainly the Krafts, and Devin McCourty was there, and he saw it firsthand how the enthusiasm for these new ticket holders is so contagious. It really was kind of neat to be part of it. It was hard not to look forward to football when all these people were there ready to, you know, get out there and knock heads with the Patriots, and they're not, you know, obviously they're not suiting up. I think it's a good thing, actually, year to year, that you do have some turnover. I think it's a good thing. Because for every, you know, five or six fans that you get who, you know, send in emails like they've sent in to PFW earlier today and last week to us here when we were talking about the fans here on the shows, you know, you have, I guarantee you have dozens of people standing in the waiting line, you know, in the queue, ready to take their spot for their tickets. So if you're really disgusted, if you're really through with them, if you're really tired of, you know, waiting for Belichick to make the right move or to, you know, to adjust things at halftime, hey, we can all talk about what we'd like to see. And we can all be disappointed if they don't make the adjustments we think that they should make at halftime and what have you. Bottom line is the guy's the head coach. The players are still going to play. That isn't going to change in midseason. But if you're tired of that, move on. We'll let somebody else in to have a turn. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Adam in Orlando. John, to answer your question, I think the fans are overreacting, but not totally. As has been talked about, Pats fans have been spoiled by the fact that for the last decade, we have done nothing but win. Losing frustrates me as much as anyone, but fans need to realize that the team cannot simply replace the great players that took us to those three Super Bowl wins in short order. Everyone loves Belichick and company when the chips are high, but as soon as we show signs of rebuilding, everyone screams that our personnel sucks. I do agree we have traded back one too many times, or traded down one too many times, and have made some poor draft day selections. A ton of our starters have not even started eight games, let alone a whole season, especially on defense. Trust me, there are a ton of other fans from other teams, like the Browns, the Bills, the Lions, etc., who would gladly trade spots with us. I will gladly take some one-season tickets if they are fed up, and I live in Orlando. I look forward to watching the team for many years to come. All right, so there you go. Adam, well put. All right, we're still waiting to hopefully contact Mark Kelso, having some trouble catching up with him today. But again, as we mentioned, he was coming back on a plane flight from someplace, so we were hoping that he would get down on the ground in time for us to visit with him today. So let's do this. Let's take a quick timeout. Hopefully we'll be able to catch up with Mr. Kelso before the end of the hour. If not, I'm going to let you hear what Bill Belichick had to say about Kevin Faulk as well. We heard from Tom Brady earlier in the show. And I, you know, Tom really had some great things, and I read to you earlier in the program what a guy like Fred Taylor had to say about Kevin Faulk. And I think Bill Belichick also had some poignant things to say, and Bill, as we know, sometimes isn't quite as forthcoming as some others are with his choice of words, but he did have some good things to say about Kevin Faulk as well. We'll get to that. Still time for your emails, webradio@patriots.com, and we'll wrap that up right here in the playbook coming up.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A., Bank of America N.A., member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? Jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited, but only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. And you want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Welcome back inside the playbook. John Rook here with you on Patriots.com radio as we head home down the home stretch here for a Wednesday. Just heard from Mark Kelso, so hopefully we'll be able to get him on here in a minute or two before we wrap up the program today. Of course, coming up inside the playbook on Thursday, what we normally do is, while Eric and I go back and forth on issues, we'll probably have some locker room and or potential conference call stuff tomorrow. And, of course, Russell Baxter from ESPN will join us as he normally does on Thursdays, not only to hit the Patriots game, but to also talk about a few of the select games from around the NFL in Week 3. So he'll be a part of that program tomorrow for us. Let me share another email here with you quickly. This one, now if I can find it again. Ah, here we go, right there. George from South Carolina. John, Vince Wilfork in his conference call this week said Bill and staff make adjustments after every play and every series. They knew what they wanted to stop against the Jets. They knew how they were going to stop it. And in the end, they didn't execute. The problem is that you don't simply replace the fiery competitiveness of players like Rodney and Junior and Vrabel and Brewski and Ty Law and McGinnis and Seymour, Ty Warren, Rosie Colvin, and Vince Wilfork year in and year out. Those players weren't just respected, they were feared to some extent or another. People might respect Jerod Mayo and Brandon Merriweather, but they don't cause concern. Think about that. They might respect Jerod Mayo and Merriweather, but they don't cause concern. This defense no longer causes offensive coordinators and quarterbacks to lose sleep. Coaches, players, fans alike just need to come to understand that. I think the team has made an effort to draft these types. Spikes and Chung show flashes of an edginess, but I still think their scouting should focus on these competitors who just work hard and win at all costs because those players will find a way to win. Interesting. George, thanks for the email. Appreciate that. All right, joining us now on the Ace Ticket Hotline is Mark Kelso, who, of course, is a former defensive back for the Buffalo Bills, part of the Bills Radio Network as their analyst, and he joined us here inside Patriots Playbook. Mark, it's John Rook. Great to hear from you, and thank you very much for the time today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Can you put that stuff in a bottle? That guy's
and
talking about it.
You're going to have to try to prod him up for me because I cannot hear him at all, Kevin. There
hello?
We go. Now it works.
I said...
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good. Can you put that stuff in a bottle and have some scouts drink it? Because it's hard to identify. It's not an exact science. I think that's why they call it scouting and I don't know, scouting and not finding, right? Because sometimes you scout them, it's hard to identify those intangible traits that you're talking about or that caller was talking about.
And I think that so many fans, at least around here, part of the frustration the fans are having, Mark, is the fact that, you know, the Patriots had a great run of success for, you know, 12, 15 years, it seems like, certainly the last decade. And then, you know, every time you go to the well, you're not going to come up with gold.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And well, I think there's still some gold to be struck as long as Tom Brady's at the helm. But he's getting older, too, and he's going to have days when he's not able to play to his level, which is probably a Hall of Fame level, and absolutely a Hall of Fame level. So But I like the formula that they have when they have a lot of good young talent and they bring in a lot of these guys towards the end of their career that want to play on a successful team and have an opportunity to go deep in the playoffs and, you know, even play for a conference championship or a Super Bowl. I think that formula has worked. I think they continue to build from the inside out. You know, I look at the roster this year and I look at a bunch of offensive linemen that they look like they're trying to tool up to replace some of these guys that, as they get up in years. So I think they have the formula down, but you're right. The fans have been spoiled in New England, no question about that.
What are your thoughts then on this Patriots team, especially in light of the fact that Kevin Faulk is out?
He, you know, in my mind, before Welker got there, I mean, and I started doing a broadcast, people would say to me, well, you know, you kind of forget about Kevin Faulk. And in my mind, he was the guy that made everything work offensively, because anytime you decided you were going to bring pressure against Brady, they'd put him in the backfield on third down and hit motion out, and then it would identify the blitz immediately. He was extremely productive. He has a third down back. He can run the ball effectively. He was great in the red area. And, you know, he'd match up against linebackers, and it was a mismatch physically, and he'd make plays. So I really, he is a terrific player, and unfortunately an injury like that is pretty significant for a player who's been around as long as he has. So, you know, I'm hopeful that he'd be able to recover. But it certainly helps the Bills. I mean, they have a stable. You guys have a stable of running backs there that probably can take his place, but it will take a stable to do it, because I don't think there's one guy who can have the productivity that Kevin Faulk can. But, you know, I don't necessarily think he's the guy that makes it go right now. And it's no, you know, I'm not telling you anything new, but in my mind, it's Wes Welker. And if Wes Welker is productive and you cannot stop him, then you are going to have a really difficult time stopping the Patriots.
Well, speaking of stable of running backs, I think Buffalo certainly has one. Which running back are we most liable to see on Sunday and why?
Yeah, good question. I hope that you see a heavy dose of Fred Jackson, because I don't think he's touched the ball nearly as much as he should, particularly with the production he had last year. He in my mind, is the, well, I haven't seen enough of C.J. Spiller. I mean, he has tremendous credentials, tremendous upside. Great burst, but in my mind right now, Fred Jackson has the best vision. He just has a knack for being able to find the seams and work his way for positive yardage. I mean, he's not going to go the distance that maybe a Spiller could. He's not going to run over people like Marshawn can, but he's going to get you positive yardage. And he's, if there's something there to be had, he's going to find it. And extremely productive. Has not carried the ball a tremendous amount. I think they were maybe trying to be a little bit careful with the hand injury he had in the preseason, and that's completely healed now. And he's, you know, to the point where I think he's taken off all his protection, the added protection for that hand. So I would like to see a heavy dose of him. I think Spiller is really good on third down and in certain situations where you can isolate him on linebackers and get him out into some open space. And Marshawn has a role too. With some tough yardage in shorter yardage situations or in a game. I mean, again, it never hurts to have multiple guys, and they have completely different running styles. So when they're in there, you know, the defense has to be prepared for different things.
Mark, do you feel like maybe this is just a question of, you know, trying to bring C.J. Spiller in a little bit more slowly? I mean, when you think, you know, first-round draft pick, you automatically think, well, this guy's got to be a franchise kind of guy, and yet it really hasn't started out that way for him.
Yeah, there are some high expectations, I think, after some of the preseason performances. So, I think it's trying to bring him along a little bit more slowly. I mean, you certainly don't want to put him in there with an offensive line that's still a little bit in transition, because Demetrius Bell has not played an entire game yet. I think his knee's healthy, but they were trying to bring him along slowly. Even last year, I mean, Cornell Green has had a good career and is a solid guy, but, you know, he can get himself in trouble if he's trying to go up against guys that are exceptional pass rushers and at certain times if he doesn't have help. But the Brad Butler, all that retirement in the offseason kind of threw that into flux as well. So I do think they're bringing him along a little bit more slowly. You know, there's no sense in taking a guy and trying to, when you're not sure about what you're going to be this year offensively. I mean, there's no sense in putting him out there and trying to give him 25 or 30 touches a game when you're just going to wear him out too early. So I think that was the sense they had last week at Green Bay. Let's pull the reins in a little bit more. Let's identify a more specific role for CJ, as opposed to just putting him out there as one of the running backs.
Mark, is the move of Ryan Fitzpatrick in a quarterback, is that a panic move in your estimation by Chan Gailey?
If you ask Chan Gailey, he'd say no. They study those guys. I mean, you know how they do it with film and day in and day out. I think it's, you know, you only have to look at the box score to see that they've had 166 and 187 total yards in two offensive games. And by any stretch of the imagination, that is not going to get it done. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's the only problem, but I don't think he's been confident when he's been in there. He hasn't thrown the ball downfield very effectively. He's missed a couple open receivers. And again, it's easy to say that, you know, from your perspective or mine, when we're sitting upstairs in the booth, that you can see open guys that maybe they can't, but he has missed a few. A couple of the interceptions last week, or both of them actually, were not Trent's fault. But again, I just don't think that they feel like he's had enough production to think that it's going to make for points on the scoreboard on Sunday afternoon. And I think they feel like, you know, we're going to make a change now. We're not going to wait two or three more games because we don't see the situation improving right now. And I mean, only time will tell what happens. But I like Ryan Fitzpatrick's. He's got a good arm. He has excellent leadership ability. He's not afraid to throw it in traffic. He's not afraid to throw it downfield, and he's not afraid to throw the deep ball. And I think that's the other thing they need to do. They need to throw the ball deep several times a game, which I think saved the one throw last week against Green Bay to Lee Evans that resulted in a penalty. But they got the play out of it about 35 yards. That's about the only play they've thrown downfield to try to extend the secondary a little bit and make them a little slower to come up to support the run. And they need to do that to expand those defenses, create some running room.
That might not be a bad call this week going against a rather young Patriots secondary.
Yeah, and I watched a little bit. I haven't done my film study yet, but I saw a little bit of the Jets game and saw some ways that they try to spread out the Patriots and then run the ball up inside. I mean, traditionally the teams that they've played, the Bills have played the last 2 weeks are pressure package teams. I mean, and the Patriots are not really a pressure package. They're running the same 30 defense, but they sit back in that quarters coverage or play some combo coverages. They don't tend to press a whole lot, which the previous two teams did for the Bills, and I think the receivers have not gotten off press coverage as well as they need to be effective offensively. So I think there'll be a little bit more room in the secondary, and you're right. I think, you know, the young guys, they got the young corner starting right from Rutgers, and I haven't seen him play yet. I'm sure he's a pretty darn good player, or he wouldn't be in there playing. But mm-hmm. But I think there'll be more room to operate downfield, and unless Banta comes or some of those linebackers come, your defensive linemen are so good against the run, I don't think they're not some of the top-notch pass rushers that they've seen in the previous weeks in Miami, some of the guys they have there, and Clay Matthews last week. So hopefully Ryan Fitzpatrick will have some time to stand back there and find some open guys.
One more for you, Mark. I saw where defensive end Marcus Stroud was asked a question basically what this team needed to do in order to rebound from 0-2, and he basically said fix everything. So is it that general? Especially in that side of the football, in your estimation? I mean, has nothing gone right? If you could fix something, what would you fix?
Well, if I could fix one thing, you can't say that, because I would agree with them that there are multiple things that need to be fixed. I mean, last week going into the game, you say they've got to handle Clay Matthews and they've got to handle JerMichael Finley.
Yeah.
And they did neither of those two things, and consequently it hurt them badly. Finley had a big game offensively, and Clay Matthews had another big game defensively. So they couldn't do those things. And the interesting thing is they have a solid defense, and the secondary is strong, although they've had some mismatches here, like I said last week with Finley. I mean, who do you cover the guy with? And I think a lot of teams around the league are going to figure that out this year, that there's really nobody that you can put on that guy to cover. There are multiple things to fix. Marcus Stroud is absolutely right. I think the linebackers have to be a little bit more aggressive as run pluggers. It's different when you play a 4-3 than a 3-4, which they're playing this year. They have to get up on those guards and reduce seams that are available for running backs, as opposed to running through shoulders and playing a particular gap. And I think they finally learned that. But, you know, now they got Keith Ellison in there, who's a really good player, but a little, smaller than a Paul Posluszny, who had figured it out. So there's some issues there. I think there's, they need to move a little bit more defensively instead of trying to play straight up like the Patriots try to do with their ends and nose tackle with Wilfork. And then in the secondary, they're tending to be aggressive and trying to bring some pressure, but I'd like to see them sit back, run some zone dogs, and jam receivers at the line of scrimmage, and then they won't have those problems where a bigger receiver, you know, like a Finley or a Marshall gave them problems against Miami that can get free by being physical with some of the corners who Bills team has good corners, but don't have as much size as a couple of the receivers that they faced. Right. In the last couple of weeks. So you want some more? I feel like I'm running on here.
No. It's all right. Good. I'm actually captivated by it all. Posluszny's still hurt, correct?
Yeah, and I would suggest that they said it was going to be a 2 to 3 week injury, so I would say that he probably did not practice today. I'm not in Buffalo, but I would say no, he would not play this week. I would probably almost be sure of that, just based on the reports from last week. He's probably on the injury report. And then offensively, boy, I could spend another 15 minutes with you to try to fix what ails them there. But I think for starters, hopefully Demetrius Bell will be ready to play the entire game. And they'll, you know, when they're in a situation where they need to throw the football downfield, they will help on the right side with Cornell Green if he's singled up with, you know, one of your better pass rushers. And again, he's a very good player, but sometimes just doesn't hold up with some of those better pass rushers. And get the ball. I think they need to get the ball. Lee Evans didn't touch it at all last week, and, you know, get the ball in Fred Jackson's hands a lot. I mean, I think Fred needs 20 touches a game, and he hasn't gotten near that yet.
All right. Mark, listen, thanks so much for spending some time with us today. I know you're traveling, and I sure appreciate your willingness to break it down. And safe trip up this way when you guys come up on Sunday.
Great. We appreciate that. And treat us nicely on Sunday, okay?
We'll try to do that. Thanks, Mark. Mark Kelso, former Buffalo Bill defensive back and now a member of the Buffalo Bills radio network as their analyst, will be here covering the game for the Bills and their radio stations on Sunday. All right, we've run a little bit over. Apologize for that. We've got Shop Talk coming up next here on Patriot.com Radio. My thanks to Mark Kelso. My thanks to Eric Scalavino. Same patch time, same patch channel tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Russell Baxter from ESPN will be in the house. We hope you will be here as well. I'm John Rook. See you tomorrow, everybody. Thank you.